listener production.
The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which it is recorded. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are the first storytellers of this land. We pay respect to their elders, past, present and emerging, as well as any Indigenous people who may be listening today.
Everyone relax, this is Tofop with Friends. I'm Charlie Clawson, and my friend today is an old friend of the show. He's appeared many times in the many iterations of what this show is now. It used to be Fofop, now it's Tofop with Friends, because we're all about branding now. Got to let people know everything's in the Everyone Relax feed. There's no Tofop, there's no Tofop with Friends, there's no Two Guys, One Cup. It's all Everyone Relax. And it's, if you like Will and Charlie, it's in this one feed. I mean, if you're listening, I assume you know that, but in case this is your first episode, this is all very confusing. This is your first episode. I'd like to welcome to the show James Clement, a.k.a. Mr. Sunday Movies, co-host of The Weekly Planet, one of my favourite podcasts. James, thank you so much for coming back on this show.
Thank you for having me.
The worst introduction.
But a slightly different, a slightly new iteration. But that makes sense. It's all in the one feed. You've consolidated. Like, one of my favorite things is when a big company buys another company and then they become an even bigger company. That's what you're doing. You're consolidating.
I would love a bigger company to buy us and just I don't have to worry about any of this shit anymore. But it's not happening.
Sure.
It's not
until they're like, well, it's slightly not as profitable as we like, and now we own your thing, but you can't do it anymore.
I don't mind. Like, I really, like, I remember I used to love, there used to be a real bitchy blog back in the day called What Would Tyler Durden Do? And it was just a guy just posting, it was a bit like Perez Hilton, but a bit funnier. He would just, like, post photos or celebrity gossip with really mean, snarky comments. And he got bought out by some big, you know, tech company or whatever that just wanted the clicks. And you sort of noticed the shift happen. Like, it was the same snarkiness, but just not as funny. Like, it wasn't as clever as it was before. And I remember he would occasionally float in and write a few of the posts, but he literally would say, like, I don't give a fuck. I got paid heaps of money and I really don't care. Like, this was not my passion project. I did it to make money and I've done that. So see you later, suckers.
God, I would love to know how much money that was. Like, is it a lifetime's worth of money, or is it, you know, what's he doing now?
There was a period of time. I mean, in my lifetime,
like,
I remember
the dot-com boom.
Yeah, there was there was the initial dot-com boom. I remember in the late 90s, like when I left uni, started getting into production. Me and a couple of comedians might have heard of, Michael Chamberlain and Charlie Pickering, were all working at this production company in Melbourne that made ads. And the guy who ran the company was this real visionary, Henrik Daniel Fjord. he was from Denmark.
Wow.
One of my Klaus really? Patriots. But he had this vision that he wanted to, he wanted like a content creators, essentially, before anyone knew what content creators were. And because we had done sort of written like some sketch comedy and stuff, he was like, maybe you guys could make some video sketches and we could, you know, sell that to these dot-com companies and they could like attach advertising to it. And he was like really ahead of his time. This was before YouTube.
Absolutely.
Even.
Yeah.
And so he took us around.
In
like
the
we
90s.
Had a bunch.
God.
Yeah. Like 99, maybe 2000.
Late 90s,
so he took us around all the, like, we met with all these kind of companies that had just bought new digs in like Richmond. They'd like converted a warehouse and everyone's riding like Razor scooters and shit and listening to the Prodigy and stuff. It was like that scene in Zoolander where you go around to Hansel's place and there's like a half pipe and, you know, Sherpa's making flatbread and stuff. Like, everyone was just like, this money's never going to run out. But it was funny because people used to say to him, look, no one's going to watch videos on their computers. Like, people want to watch entertainment on there. People want to watch sketch comedy on their big TVs, on their big rear projected box like TVs.
That's right. Yeah. God, they fall in you and kill you immediately. Like, that's what they want to, you know.
I mean, I do wonder, like, if it ever, like, because it would have only been 4 years later that YouTube just exploded. And I, like, sometimes it's not great to be a visionary because sometimes the visions happen a little too early.
And, like, the technology wasn't there. Like, people didn't like watching video on their computers because it didn't work. Like, it would be really low quality and really slow. Like, it was dreadful. So, yeah, that was true, I guess, at the time, technically, yeah.
I mean, in some ways, James, and this is going to be the clumsiest segue ever, you're a visionary.
Ooh. Wow,
you are a visionary. You very early on saw where the public interest was going in terms of their love of comics, movies, and TV shows. And so you monetize that with your very own podcast and YouTube channel.
I did.
But the reason I've brought you on to this show is because I'm very curious to know. Like, you got on at the right time. You got on when, you know, Marvel movies were just like killing at the box office and everyone wanted comic book properties. But there has been a very obvious drop-off in the quality and even, I'd say, the demand for comic book entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who has, like, you know, this is your bread and butter. You play your trade talking about these things. How have you noticed it?
Well, I think it's people are definitely sick of it. You know, like I speak to like a normal person, so a person who doesn't do a podcast. You know, whenever they talk about comic book movies, they're just like, I can't with this. Like, it's too many. I don't get it anymore. Like, it built to a thing and now it's still going. And now it's a multiverse. Like, I don't, it seems like homework. I have to watch 9 not very interesting shows to get to understand a movie. You know, so yeah, I think that's where it's at. It's oversaturation. And in doing so, like the quality has, quality control dipped because everything kind of moved to streaming.
I mean, I
happened because of the pandemic.
I think there's like, I sort of like voluntarily, not even consciously, dipped out of like comic book movies a few years ago. I think pretty much when, you know, the Avengers wrapped things up. And then I had sort of dipped in occasionally. And the last two films that I saw, I'd say were Black Adam and Blue Beetle. And both of those films were so, like, ferociously mediocre. Like, technically there's nothing wrong with them. Like, if you look
at
it. I agree.
And I think 5 or 8 years ago, you know, they're pretty good movies or good enough, you know?
Right. So you think expectation has shifted as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think people, they don't want to settle for just a whatever movie. I don't know about you, but well, like I see too many things. Like I saw Madam Web, which is a movie I would not have seen if it wasn't my job to see it. People don't want to go to see like an average movie. They want to go see an event. That's why like Barbie and Oppenheimer took off because it was like a thing. Everybody was, you know, talking about it. And so that's what people, you need to give them incentive to go. And if it's just like, I don't know, the 27th movie in a franchise that sort of ended 4 years ago where you need to watch a TV show or have all this like knowledge of different universes. It's too much. You're asking too much of people. It's like when the original Dune came out in the 80s, they gave everybody like a pamphlet, like a booklet at the start to be like, this is the world of Arrakis. And people are like, no, like I'm not doing fucking homework to watch a movie I'm not interested in.
Well, speaking of homework, I did assign you some in preparation for this episode. I wanted you to walk me through what you think was the start of the decline. Like, maybe I guess we can talk about where it started. Like, you know, you're a bit younger than me, but Will and I talk about this a lot on TOEFOP, that, you know, when we started TOEFOP, we would talk a lot about, oh God, wouldn't it be amazing if they made this into a comic book movie? Wouldn't they made this comic? Because we grew up at a time where maybe every now and then you get like a Blade or, you know, you get an X-Men or something like that. But it was sort of like one good comic book movie for every 5 bad ones. And you just couldn't imagine that you'd ever see like a comic accurate costume on screen and stuff. And, you know, there's no way I could have imagined in 2010 when we were debating whether or not the Avengers was going to be like, you know, a hit or not, that I would get to a point where I'm like, oh God, like fucking go away. I don't want to see any more of this shit. So what was it like for you growing up as a comic book fan? Like, were you the same? Did you sort of like, you know, just dream about one day seeing like a comic accurate costume on screen?
I think, like, I'm more like a movies guy than a comic guy. Like, Mason, my co-host, he's more of the comic guy. But yeah, definitely. Like, they were almost, like, ashamed to put anybody in, like, a proper costume. Like, all the original X-Men movies are in, like, one-piece leather, like, biker outfits, you know, which is pretty hilarious. But that was also the style of the time. You know, Ben Affleck did it in Daredevil and whatever. But so, yeah, it's been really interesting, like, seeing these things, you know, actually, like, that take a real shot at, like, what would an actual Captain America suit look like, you know, physically. And they're still, like, even, you know, they finally put Hugh Jackman in his proper Wolverine suit for that upcoming Deadpool movie, which I think is a movie that people will go out to see because it feels like, or at this point, who knows, that could change, then it's an event. It's a big deal. They're doing something that people actually want to see. Like, yeah. Because again, I think it's just, it's a there's too much of it. There's no proper oversight because everybody's stretched too thin. There's too many universes. People don't know if, like, is Superman in the same universe as, like, Spider-Man? A normal person doesn't and shouldn't need to know that. Yeah. Like, people just want to see good movies. And that's why, like, Guardians of the Galaxy 3 did really well, because you don't really need to know anything other than the vague understanding of those characters. You didn't need to know who traveled through time and which person came over from another dimension.
All audiences want to see is animals being tortured in cages. That's what
exactly.
I got from that movie. That's
finally.
What that's what I want to see, just cruelty. Cruelty to sentient beings. That's what I'd like to
flat
see.
Flat out cruelty, yeah. But I think they are, or Disney in particular, they're course correcting. Like, they're stripping right back and they're going back to one or two movies a year, maybe a couple shows, and that's it. Because it's hurting them. Because also, when you put everything on streaming, people are like, well, why should I? Why should I go to see this when in 3 months I can watch Captain Marvel 2? You know, or not, or just not watch it at all, which, you know, most people are also doing.
And it's also going to be an issue when the industry that has inspired this genre of movies, the comic book industry, is kind of on its knees, you know, when they're not creating new stories, when we keep going back to these classic storylines and turning these into movies rather than, like, if it was something where the events of the movies fed back into the lore of the comic books and, you know, you could create new stories from that, but it doesn't feel like that, you know, and especially with Zack Snyder and Batman, it's like, did you just read one Batman comic? Is that
skimmed? Like, I would say skimmed. Yeah.
I did notice you were talking about him going on Joe Rogan, and he basically credited your video, right, as giving him the green light to make Batman a sadist.
But look, I just want to clarify also, I made that video, and him seeing that video does not coincide with his version of Batman. For those people who don't know, I basically made a compilation video 10 years ago, probably maybe 8, of all the times Batman is killed in the movies. And if you know anything about Batman in the comics, he's not supposed to kill. Like, it's a hard and fast rule. Yeah, it's his one rule, but they just do it. Like, in the movies, he just kind of does it casually and whatever. So I made that before his Batman movie came out, as like, this is funny, isn't it, that Batman's just murdering people. And then he referenced that in an interview. He was like, yeah, I saw this compilation where Batman's just murdering, so, like, I don't understand what the big deal is. And I was like, no, that's not what I was... I wasn't really saying anything, but that wasn't the point that I was hoping that I was trying to convey.
I mean, this is a little sidebar, but I did watch a clip of that interview with Joe Rogan, and to see Zack Snyder so, like, enthusiastically, you know, talking about why Batman would kill, and then the comparison he's using is Captain Kirk's Kobayashi Maru, and they're just cutting back to Rogan, and you can hear the inner monologue of just like, fucking nerd. Like, shut up, you fucking nerd.
The thing is, though, also, Rogan is a nerd. Like, he grew up on comic books. I mean, he's a nerd for, like, MMA and all those things. Like, everybody's a nerd about something. I've said this a million times. He was, like, addicted to, like, LAN Quake, you know, like, linking a whole bunch of computers up to play competitive. I think it was Quake or one of those. Yeah. He's, like, a massive nerd. Yeah. He's just kind of, he's got this facade of, like, oh, well, he was a fighter, so that's
because
he
kills and eats animals.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And I always laugh when I see a photo of him. And there's nothing wrong with being short, whatever. I'm not a super tall guy.
Short king.
But he's like 4'2". He's like 5'5", maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. There's something about muscle bound short guys like that. Again, I'm only 5'10". I'm not a huge man myself, but like we talk about.
I mean, you're 6'1" in acting, right?
Oh yeah, that's right. When I'm filling out my wardrobe form, I'm 6'1". But we talked about the Liver King last year, and you know, I mean, he looks so freakishly muscled anyway. But then when I found out that he was like 5'7", I'm like, whoa. That's so weird. And then, like, I've heard Broden talk about meeting Tom Cruise when he worked at the MCG, and he said Tom Cruise is like abnormally muscled for such a tiny little man. I don't know. There's something visually about it that like upsets me. I don't know. It's just like it's diseased. It. Here I am saying I've got no problem with short people. I've just referred to them collectively as it.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But you're talking about a very specific kind of celebrity muscular short.
Yeah, it's the desperate overcompensation, I think. That's what's going on there. Is like, I've been bullied or pushed around my whole life, so I'm going to get ridiculously muscled.
Well, you would know this, though. Like, it doesn't, like, short and muscular, doesn't that play well on camera? Like, it's easier to frame and...
Definitely.
Is that a thing?
Yes. No, definitely being slight... And is better on camera because, you know, the camera adds 10 pounds and all that kind of stuff. I've got like a few mates who are actors who are big, like 6'3", and they look enormous on camera.
Yeah.
Especially as most actresses, you know, if you're, you know, got a love interest or whatever, like 5'5", 5'6", if you're like, you know, that much, like a foot taller than them, like that's why you use Apple boxes and stuff to equal out the heights and stuff because it does look weird. But I think that might be changing a bit more. Like I think that... Mm. The Hemsworth factor of you can just be enormous and be a leading man.
Yep.
And so now, like, I remember when I was doing Home and Away, a lot of the younger actors who would start on the show would come in ripped, like just like that. They would arrive on their first day. And it's like, have you learnt your lines or have you just been at the gym just pumping out reps because you are so incredibly shredded and you've given me an eating disorder. Thank you.
Yeah. Does that taper off though? Would you say like the longer they're on the show, they like pull back?
No, I think it makes, I think it gets more competitive because especially on a show like that where, well, you're shirtless a lot. I think it just like even dudes who came in who were kind of probably more focused on acting, like more serious actors, by the end of it, you know, they're all getting tans and working out. You can't help it. Like it is a weird thing.
No, you're surrounded by it, right?
Yeah, but if you watch them, I think we have talked about this before. But, you know,
we always skew into working out.
Working out. Particularly like watching a movie where someone's playing like just an ordinary person, a bus driver or a school teacher or something, and they take their shirt off and they're ripped. And it's like, how? Like, when did that happen?
Yeah.
But
it's the norm. It's like the standard body, right? And anything less than that is like a joke.
You know, if you see Keanu Reeves shirt. Take his shirt off, you're like, ugh. And it's like, Keanu Reeves is fit. Like, he's got enough, fitness that he can do those John Wick films. But because he doesn't have a six-pack or whatever, you're like, gross, what's wrong with him?
Yeah. What a freak. Yeah.
All right, absolutely. Let's bring it back on topic. So tell me, how do you, have you charted the decline of the comic book movie?
I mean, you can definitely see it in box office numbers. You know, people aren't. And I think that's also, you know, but the box office is suffering in general. And as mentioned, like, it's expensive to go, like, when you go with the family, that's a lot of money. And, you know, if you're buying your snacks, I know people like, this is a sidebar, you don't have to sneak in snacks in Australia. You can just bring in food, right? They don't stop you, right?
Ah, I didn't know that. Is that true?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can just bring in, I mean, you can't bring in, like...
a pizza or something.
Yeah, I assume. But yeah, you can just bring it in. And also, they're all teenagers. They don't give a shit.
Yeah, okay. So hang on. I'm pretty sure. I used to work at a cinema back in the day. I'm sure we had a rule that you couldn't. I don't remember frisking anyone. But
no.
I mean, you know, it's weird. It's actually like a bit of a Mandela effect. I'm starting to wonder, like, was there a rule or not? Like, I mean, Batman had his one rule. I had my one rule as an actor.
Yeah, absolutely.
People bring food in. But you're right. Okay, sure.
I'm just carrying food in. Oh, man, maybe people are looking at me like, this fucking guy just...
But what kind of food? Like, you're not taking stinky hot food in.
No, no, I'm just taking, like, you know, mostly just, like, fresh cut kind of vegetables.
Not like steak like or something.
Yeah, like a steak. No, like, you know, like celery, carrots, or, you know, maybe, and I'll try and eat it when it's loud. So I'm not just up there just like, just
now I'm looking
away.
At you like Joe Rogan looked at Zack Snyder, you fucking nerd. What are you two chopping up veggies to go to the movies?
I don't want to eat like a giant tub of popcorn. Oh,
that's the whole point. That's the joy of it, right?
I don't even like popcorn that much. It's like I like it enough, but I don't want to eat, like, you know, eat a kilo of popcorn.
Even like when you do you put the Maltesers in the chocolate? That the popcorn, that's the best.
Is it?
Yes.
I don't know. Like separately, sure. Love Maltesers.
No, no, the salt and the sweet.
No, too hot. I don't.
Two hot tips for you. Crush up a Kit Kat over your popcorn and mix it all together and then eat that during the movie, or the old Maltesers trick. But no, man, I would never eat anything healthy in a movie because in my mind, that's where I get to eat whatever the fuck I want. It'd be disgusting no one can see me. My secret shame. Like I remember, I actually did a job last year where I had to be kind of, I did have to take my shirt off. So I was being very healthy in the lead up to shooting this scene. And then my last day on set, I booked a gold class ticket. I went to see The Flash. I wish I'd picked a better movie, but I thought, oh, this would be a God. Fun kind
of
the last
three comic book movies you've seen. The Flash, yeah. Blue Beetle, and Black
That's
Adam.
Right. My God. It wasn't so much about the movie.
The decline of the DC universe. Yeah.
It was more about and I ordered fucking like the worst shit. Like I got I got sliders. I had a massive sundae. I had popcorn on top of that. I had a couple of beers as well. Like it was gross. And I remember because it was getting the movie, every time they're in the Batcave, I'm like, fuck, I can't see my sundae. And I'm trying to scoop up all the chocolate at the bottom. I'd have to wait for an explosion or something so I could get the light. So I could, there's a bit of chocolate I didn't get. I was an animal. It was disgusting.
Oh, man. I love how they also market it as it's classy food, but it's my wife, Claire, who you know, her brother used to work in gold class, and it was just him, just microwaving and deep frying food out the back, furiously. And then he'd also take the orders. So he'd be doing both. He'd be like, hang on, I'll just check with the chef. And then he'd run out the back and get on the deep fryer.
It's like Faulty Towers. He's just swapping exactly, hats and shit out the back. Okay, so when did the cracks first start to appear? In my mind, it's post-event. DC aside, DC was always struggling, right?
I think you saw there were bursts of it kind of coming back to life or last gasps or whatever. And I don't think it's over. I think if Disney are good at anything, it's that they can rebrand and refresh. You see it with their phases of animated movies. If you look at the decades, they drop off and then something else will pop up. I don't know what they were doing in the 80s with their animation, but, and then it was the Little Mermaid and Lion King, and then it resurged again, and then it dipped off, and then they did Frozen and whatever, you know. So I think they'll figure it out. But I can't remember what I was saying. What was the question again?
Well, the question was when did the cracks first start appearing?
Oh, that's right.
It feels the Avengers was the absolute pinnacle, right? Critically lauded, huge box office. The cast wave goodbye, goodbye, farewell, and amen. And everyone seems happy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then you had Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield came back, so they're giving people some reasons to come back some of the time. But there's only so many movies you could be like, well, the world's at stake, and this guy's got to destroy the universe and whatever. And it's Ant-Man 3, and it's the greatest villain you've ever seen is here, and it's okay, is he? Oh, he lives in a tiny little microscopic world,
quantum world.
Okay,
you could literally sneeze on him.
But but he might get out. Oh, that's. And there's a million of them from different dimensions. And there's stuff happening in real life as well with that guy. They've ditched all of that. So I think, they definitely lost direction. And not, I think it was, an unfortunate choice of actor, but people don't want homework. And there's no if there's no looming threat. But also the looming threat is every movie and everything is ending all of the time. Sometimes you just want to have a movie where it's just a pretty good movie. It doesn't have to be. I think studios have the idea that instead of building to something now, it's everything. Well, we could just make $1 billion every time, right? And it's no. Some of them you make smaller stories, more character focused. I mean, look at Thor, for example. Those movies never do exceptionally well, but you build to a bigger thing, and I think they're failing to recognize that. And again, it's when there's also 30 episodes of live action Marvel a year as well on top of that. I mean it's my job and I don't do that. I'm like, I'm not watching that much stuff.
How are you consuming it? Is it on in the background while you're doing other shit, while you're editing or something?
Yeah, usually, yeah. If I even watch it, some of it now I just don't. I just can't. And also there's TV is good. And so I want to watch good TV. I don't want to watch whatever TV that, that doesn't matter. And there was a time that, I would watch anything even if it wasn't great. I watched Iron Fist, which wasn't a great show, but I'd just be like, well, I guess this is my job and it's good enough. What was the point for you? Were you like Avengers and I'm done? Are you interested if they made there's a new Robert Pattinson Batman movie in 3 years?
And, you know, Marvel won me over just through the just how well done and well cast those films were. And so I think for me, like, Jem has no interest. You know, she's vaguely aware of comic book characters.
Care either.
No. Yeah. But, you know, she likes spectacle and all that kind of stuff. And so the Avengers, I had to kind of, like, for Endgame and Infinity Gauntlet, was it? Infinity War and Endgame. War, I had to kind of word her up on everything. But she got it and she enjoyed it. And, you know, I think those films stand on their own anyway. Like, I think they're just very
well they're fun. Made. You know, they're exactly what they're supposed to be, you know?
But now she fucking can't stand them. And I think that, like, I have maxed out all my credit in terms of, you know, it doesn't matter if I explain what's going on. She's like, I don't care because it's the same fucking structure every time. And there's always like a, there's always sequences that look like they've been pulled out of a video game. I don't give a fuck about anyone. I don't care about. So, so she's out. So I.
And the tone is the same as well, right? There's no, like, the tone is just like quips and a big thing happens and somebody turns to another person and goes, this is crazy. And
it's like, even like Black Panther that was so lauded and nominated for Oscars, I'm like, it's okay. Like, I think he's
great. Like, was great, you know, but I agree. It's fine. Like, it's
felt strange. Yeah. Like, that felt much more of a political kind of thing when all those Oscars. I felt like there's a lot of guilt in Hollywood. They're like, we need to laud this because it's made so much money and we're scared we're missing something. So let's like, you know, just like throw all these nominations at it because we feel like we don't want to look like we're just out of touch old white people. No. We get youth culture. We get black culture. We're gonna like, it's like, okay, guys. Like, I think you could have maybe celebrated some other filmmakers who are doing more interesting stuff.
Sure. I mean, I think also, like, you can't underplay, like, the significance of seeing a character like that and, you know, a movie like that making $1 billion and it's appealing to people who don't see themselves represented.
Well, I guess if The Dark Knight is going to get, like, 12 nominations, then it makes complete sense that the Black Panther. But I think from then on, like, where my interest went is more into TV. Like, I actually think The Boys is fantastic. I loved Peacemaker. I thought that was, it feels like all the risk is being done and all the interesting stuff is happening on TV. I watched Gen V, the first two episodes of that. I didn't quite like it as much as the other shows.
Yeah, they didn't land as well for me. I thought it got stronger, but it was kind of like, it's The Boys, but I don't care as much about the people in this.
I've seen far too many gigantic penises in The Boys now. Like, I don't need to see CGI penises recreated in such a loving detail. Like, I mean, that was one where Jim actually.
Maybe the penises aren't for you. You know, you're not the target demographic for CGI penises.
But I'm quite glad because Jim started watching Gen V with me and then she fell asleep and took herself to bed. And then, like 20 minutes later, a tiny little girl's holding onto a giant penis. And I'm like, I'm very glad that this would have been. I felt awkward if I had insisted she stuck around to watch the end of this episode.
No, this is important. This is time we're spending together that I value. Yeah. No, I think you're right, though. A lot of the risks are being taken in other stuff, not necessarily comic book stuff, but stuff on TV. And I think it will be interesting to see what happens with DC now because James Gunn, who made Peacemaker and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, and I really liked Suicide Squad.
The Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad.
There's Suicide Squad, and there's the Suicide Squad. Yeah, no,
and
I agree.
So I think that stuff's really cool, and you know, I would probably continue to watch that. But it's always
Do you have interest in his Superman movie next year?
No, just because I think James Gunn has always worked better with characters that have, you know, the Guardians. Or if it's Peacemaker, these are sort of like virtually unknown Suicide Squad, you know, real C and D grade characters that people aren't beholden to the mythology.
Yeah, you can do anything, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas you give him unless like all of a sudden Superman's going to have some kind of weird quirk, like, you know.
No, I think the twist will be that he won't. I think he's going to do Superman like straight up earnest, which we super haven't earnest. Seen since like the, yeah, super earnest, which we haven't seen since like the 80s. Yeah. You know,
yeah, okay.
Like it's always Superman, but there's a twist, and it's like, what if there was just?
I guess you're right, because Brandon Routh was like emo Superman. It wasn't Christopher Reeve.
And that
Clark Kent was Christopher Reeve.
Sequel, yeah,
yeah,
but yeah,
okay.
So I think that's the angle, and I think also James Gunn does heart and earnestness really well. Like, he does, he's made, like, a lot of grubby films, and you see, like, that woven in and out of his other movies, but he does, he can do that, you know? Like, the Guardians movies end in, like, a big song and dance, you know, the last one, and everybody's happy and adopting each other.
Yeah, and I guess even with Peacemaker, there's a fair bit of pathos, like, the character is kind of tragic, and, you know, there are sort of, like, that, you know, we're seeing where he's dancing around in his underwear is like, you know, it's funny, but it's also quite sad and tragic. So you're right. He does infuse his characters. So if you do the beautiful, you know, alien, the you know, the kind of Moses story with Superman, you know, you could, I guess you could sort of imbue it with a bit of heart. But I'm not excited for it. Like even the Batman, and I used to love Batman more than any character, but I was like, I'm not excited. The trailer didn't do anything for me. And I went and saw it. I thought it was fine again.
Yeah, really?
But but there's nothing new. You've seen that Pete Holmes sketch, right, where Batman talking to the Batman and he's like, what exactly is different? It's like, you're just vegan, apparently. That's the only difference. I mean, I had a mate of mine text me before the Batman to say, after I'd seen it, to say, oh my God, this is amazing. This is everything a Batman film should be. And I just was, I don't know. I just sort of feel like we've seen it. I feel like it was not different enough from the Nolan Dark Knight, you know, maybe like a Silver Age Batman, you know, like a sort of gray trunks and blue undies Batman would be different.
Who kills?
Something really, Yeah, exactly. I think I've seen that Corridor Crew video, right? Haven't they done that?
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
With the 66 Batman that made him kill or something. But I don't know. I always thought that I was resistant to kind of Marvel and the way they structured their universe with the interlinking stuff because I'm like, but comic books always have different authors and like different writers, different artists come in and that's almost the kind of beauty of it is you take these characters with some, you know, their lore and mythology and then you allow someone to reinterpret that or revisualize that. And I thought, you know, DC were on the right path, which is like, let's go to approach really good filmmakers and give them, you know, RIP, but they're not forced to make them link to anything else, you know. But then they started doing that and then like DC's plan of let's copy Marvel but worse.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think, I think you're right. They didn't start that way. They got like very specific visions. And even for like Joker, which I don't love, I think it's, look, it is what it is. People like it. But
James, are you talking about the film that changed the face of cinema? Apparently people who went to the first screening that ran out to the street.
That's right. They were flipping cars and whatever. they did start that way and then they were like, oh, shit, and then they panicked and they clearly, like, course-corrected, but they kind of went the wrong direction and then The Rock stepped in to be like, I'll save this universe with Black Adam.
You know what's wrong with this universe? The hierarchy of power. that is the clear problem here.
I think there is, like, a comparison to be made, though, with The Rock in comic book movies. Just, like, initially beloved, can't put a foot wrong, everybody's into it, and then there's an oversaturation, and then it's like this feels really homogenous, and like there's a formula here that we can now see, you know, and we're kind of sick of this. I think there is like a parallel there, actually.
Yeah,
just thinking that's all about
you've, that. You've just hit on like one of our favorite topics on TOEFOP is that we are giving.
But Will met him, didn't he, in like the 2000s?
Yeah, when he was still a wrestler, he came out to promote his book maybe or something. And Will always says like he glowed, like he had the charisma was palpable when he walked into the room. But this idea of him, because he's a workaholic clearly, right? You know, he does TV shows, he produces TV shows, has the XFL, he's got his own energy drink. And I saw he's doing male cosmetics now. As well
is
as, he's just released a skincare brand. Like, so he's a brand, right? And he works really hard and seemed bulletproof. But now that those films have bombed and you sort of feel, I mean, how do you feel bad for a fucking billionaire like Hollywood star? But I did feel bad because he was obviously passionate about Black Adam and really, like, he put it all on the line for that film. And you're just like, fuck, I wish it had been a better movie because the amount of effort you're putting into promoting it and talking about it, it's just so underwhelming. But that and then, you know, whatever, the river cruise, and then, you know, whatever, flop after flop after flop. And we were saying, this is last year, it's like, oh, The Rock, he needs to go back, like he needs to readopt that kind of, that image he had when he came out of wrestling, which is like, you know, the bad guy. He needs to lose the physicality, work with an up-and-coming, like, indie director.
And we had, like, this exact conversation,
Yeah, and that's exactly what's happened, you know? And it was, it's funny because I know you don't really follow the wrestling, but what happened?
Well, didn't he step in recently and there was a big controversy because he was like, I'm in charge of this now or whatever?
Well, so they were leading up to WrestleMania and they had their kind of, you know, main card acts, but one of them got injured and then the other one got caught up in all this horrible Vince McMahon stuff. So they had to kind of, like, they had their two main events and they didn't have any stars. The Rock at the same time was being brought onto the board of the company that owns the WWE. So he stepped in to say, well, I'll take over, you know, the main event of WrestleMania. I'll go up against my real life cousin. And everyone thought, oh, that'll be amazing because, you know, there had been talk about what it would be like to bring The Rock back to take on his cousin. But what they didn't realize was that the audience had invested in this other wrestler called Cody Rhodes, and he's a good guy in his story. And so when The Rock came back, everyone just fucking said, no, we don't want this. And like the online.
And it wasn't like, you know, oh, you're the villain, boo. It was like, no, we just don't want this. Like that was.
Yeah, we genuinely don't want this. No, they were actually legitimately booing him. But he was smart enough and his people were smart enough, and wrestling enables you to do this, is go, okay, let's follow what the crowd wants. And it's actually been excellent to watch. Like, we live in a world of nostalgia. We live in a world of reboots. To see The Rock coming out in his 2000 or his 99 The Rock persona where he's like insulting the audience and stuff. I mean, it was funny because he sort of, when he came back before he did the heel turn, he was coming back as The Rock, but it felt artificial. It felt scripted.
It was like the movie star The Rock. Was that like
Yeah. And no one was buying it. Wrestling fans weren't buying it. And even, you know, I wouldn't say I'm a wrestling fan. I'm sort of more like wrestling adjacent. I follow the wrestling bit. But even I was like, it feels false. It feels artificial. It feels like when they did Dumb and Dumber 2 and they put Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels in the costumes. You're like, ugh, yuck. Yeah. I mean, it looks like the original guys, but they're all just weird and older now. Like a yuck. I don't like this at all.
I don't know. I think it's not a mark of quality, like his work at this point, you know. But we had that exact same conversation of he should do like an A24 film or whatever, which is what he's doing. He's doing like
With the Safdie, one of the Safdie
MMA
brothers.
Yeah, an MMA biopic,
the Wrecking Machine, the Smashing Machine, it's called.
Something like that. Yeah, and just I don't know. Also, like, I don't want to see you all the time. I don't want to see anybody that much, you know. Especially, and I think that's one thing.
It's like him and Ryan Reynolds, because they hit upon a persona that works for them. That, you know, like, because The Rock tried different personas leading up to becoming The Rock. You know, he was he had that period sort of coming out of wrestling where he started doing like family friendly comedies and he slimmed down so he wasn't as physically imposing. But then when he joined the Fast and the Furious, he realized, oh, this is what people want to see. Like a giant, like literally larger than life kind of
just
character.
Just steamrolling people.
Never kisses a girl. Like, no babes, you know.
No,
sexually,
I find that really interesting. And because, like, Tom Cruise is a different size. We've talked about that. But there is this, like, sexlessness to them, which I find really fascinating. And I think Tom Cruise... And I think it was through, like, market research, probably didn't kiss a woman on screen until, like, the most recent Top Gun. Because people
and
are
that
just
was
like, we don't...
weird.
It was weird.
I found that the most awkward part of the new Top Gun. I mean, the whole film was weird. I mean, don't get me started on why that film is so weird. I know you love it, but...
I don't love it. I think it's... I like it a lot. It's exactly what it's supposed to be. You know, I think it's...
weird.
It's super weird.
Why is Goose's son dressing exactly like his dad? Why does he dress and have the same affectations as his father?
I know. Why is he singing Great Balls of Fire?
Why does he have a mustache and aviator sunglasses and Hawaiian shirt? Like, what the fuck is going on? If I dressed exactly like my dad, I'd be wearing like a sleeveless woolen cardigan, right? Although he did have a mustache, so maybe I am trying.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, I mean, who knows? I find it fascinating as well that, like, in the world of Top Gun, everybody around Maverick is dying except for him. Like, he's the only one that's left. Everyone else is dead or mysteriously vanished.
But not only is he not dying, but he's wearing the same leather jacket that he wore 30 years ago.
Yeah, like, it's
have you
so
got any
bizarre.
Mates who peaked in high school? Like, that's Maverick.
Yeah, absolutely, like, it is.
I still use my school bag. I've got my blazer.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I was king of this patches. Joint.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the message of the movie is like, I'm going to teach this new generation how to be the best fighter pilots. But guess what? I'm actually the best fighter pilot. Who knew? It was me.
I actually saw the new Mission Impossible. And I quite enjoyed it. Like, I do love the Mission Impossible films. I think they're really well made. But I did notice, like, for all his commitment to doing his own stunts and stuff, I think it makes his face look weird when he's like, when he's going through the air at terminal velocity. You can see all the work that's been done, like when the skin starts like moving and flapping around. I'm like, oh, I don't know.
You're right, yeah.
Of all the
you
actors.
You see where all the staples are.
Yeah.
They are. Exactly. Those parts are anchored in.
The fillers, just like something.
Yeah, the fillers right shifting about. Yeah, I know there's this thing of like
he lands and he looks like a completely different actor, like his like chin something up on his forehead.
Yeah, I love how people are like, look, this ageless action star. And I'm like, I don't know if he's. I mean, he looks great for like 60, but I don't know about ageless. You know?
Yeah.
But again,
That one paparazzi photo of him got released, remember? Or was that the basketball or something? And it was like...
Oh, yeah.
It was like a portrait of Dorian Gray. Well,
it was like that.
Yeah.
It was like the hair was all... He had a bloated... Maybe he just had a surgery or something, but his face was all like puffy and...
I'm surprised he went out in public when he's so image conscious. Someone else... I got fed one of those YouTube shorts, which are always... vaguely racist, evil. I don't know. Do you notice that?
Sure.
Like, or is it just my
algorithm? Yeah, definitely. They'll quickly put you down a pipeline. Don't worry about that.
But it was one of Bradley Cooper's plastic surgery. And it was like some guy, I assume he's a doctor because he was wearing scrubs. He might have just been a YouTuber. But
was this
explaining...
a bald guy? He's completely bald? Is this the.
Yes.
Yeah. I've seen that guy. Yeah, I've had him.
Oh, yeah. And so he's explaining what Bradley Cooper had done and why. Bradley Cooper's face is so shiny and literally like they had the camera zoom in behind his ear or in front of his ear to show you where
he's got the little scarf. Yeah.
God and damn. I was talking to Jem about it and I was like, but you like me like this, right? Like, you don't mind a bit of a salty old sea dog. And she was like, well, you know, like you can always look better.
What?
You know,
so
you don't
just
have to...
Like a lizard.
I don't think, I'm not sure she's saying I need to get surgery, but she's like, if you don't want jowls, you got to get something done there.
You
but
do not have jowls. Yet. Your jawline is very crisp. I think you're
well,
doing
all right. And the beard helps. Like the
beard's a makeup for men, you know, so that's.
Is that what they say?
That's what they say. It's true.
The Rock has real makeup for men, actual makeup for men.
I mean, you could do both if you wanted to.
What are we even fucking talking about anymore?
I don't know what happened. Forgotten.
Did we get anywhere?
Tom Cruise is sexless. The Rock is there. Them kissing.
No. We're talking about comic book movies. We said the Decline started after the Avengers, right?
Yes.
Because you were asking me what happened, and I said after the Avengers, I pretty much checked out. So what happened post that? All that main cast, apart from Hemsworth, leave.
Yeah. There was a Black Widow. Prequel for some reason,
which I feel like she sued them.
She did because they released it day and date with streaming, and they didn't tell her. So she was going to get a cut of the box office, which she still did, but she obviously lost out on a lot of that because. I mean, but there was still momentum then; like people were still seeing them, and it's only been more recently that people have started giving up. Like Captain Marvel 2, which was called The Marvels, recently bombed. There was the Ant-Man bombed. You know, people. Are losing interest. And I think they feel kind of, I don't know if you saw, did you see New Indiana Jones?
No.
Not a fan of Indiana Jones 5?
I was getting sucked into the nostalgia for a while. Like, hey, the Ghostbusters are back. Hey, Michael Keaton's back as Batman. And I always get sucked into the trailer and then I get burnt really badly. Like, I love Michael Keaton, you know, as an actor. I've always loved Michael Keaton. I love his Batman. And I got very excited. I think I even texted you when I saw that trailer. And so when I did my big gold class thing, I was like, what is this? I mean, it's not even that he was bad.
He's not bad at all. He's doing Batman.
But he's doing, I don't know though, is he? Because that's not the Batman I remember. Like, all
well,
of a sudden,
technically, he's not the same Batman. He's from a multiverse or whatever, I guess. But yeah.
Like, he's wearing like overalls and repairing the Batmobile, and he sounded more like Indiana Jones. He kept referring to the Flashes. Hey, kid, don't worry about it, kid. Yeah. Like, I'm like, that's not the original Tim Burton Batman was just this quirky fucking weirdo. Like,
yeah,
he's
very
strange. I can't
imagine
him quipping and stuff like that. So, no, I wasn't tempted. And then I heard a lot about, like, the CGI. There's a lot of de-aging and stuff, but he's got an old man's voice or something, which sounds
very
disconcerting.
A lot of people like that. They're like, this is what I don't want to see. I want to see young Indiana Jones. And I'm like, I don't want to see this. Like, this is, for me, that's the worst part, watching, like, a CGI Harrison Ford running about. Like, I hate that. It's awful to look. I'd rather see, I liked the bits where he was like, oh, my shoulders. Like, yeah, that's, I can relate. That's good. This is what an 80-year-old man would be, you know?
I mean,
anyway, it's not great. Like, it's absolutely not. It's not a great movie.
I understand, like, nostalgia and but it does sort of feel like when we were sort of growing up, there was new IP being created that you could get nostalgic about 20 years from now. But what are we going to be nostalgic for in 20 years?
Exactly.
Time?
We're in this kind of weird nostalgia loop. You know, where like, and I'm trying to avoid this with like my son, because I don't want him to like just watch all the things that I like. I want him to watch new things and encourage him, you know, to enjoy things that he likes. Like, I'm not going to sit him down and be like, right, we're going to watch every Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. Like, first of all, I don't want to do that either. But just like, you don't need to.
I also think too that what happens with the nostalgia reboots is that the reverence for the original material causes people to misunderstand the characters that they are bringing back.
Yes.
Like, I saw Wonka and I'm like, Willy Wonka is not this whimsical, lovable, you know, guy who just wants to help street urchins. He fucking hates children. He's a sociopath who hates.
I have a theory and I stand by it, even though the new movie contradicts it, that he's an escaped Nazi scientist. Like, he's the right age, is around that era, you know. He knows, like, stuff that he should not know. Slavery. Like, he's been doing some weird stuff. You know, that's just my working theory.
Occasionally he says Sig Heil.
Yeah, that's right. Just stuff like that, you know, just little hints.
Yeah. I mean, I love that filmmaker. The guy did the Paddington movies. What's his name? Paul. I can't remember his name.
Paul King?
Anyways.
I can't remember. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I didn't mind it because I thought it was going to be dreadful. And I'm like, oh, it's nice. It's hard. There's some heart to this and whatever. But
I found it so, it's the films in the 70s, whether it was a kid's film or a horror film or a drama, just everything was horrible. Like the subtext was everything fucking sucks.
Yeah, everything's
the world's
horrible.
The world's a frightening place. Nothing's going to work out for you.
Everything's horrible.
Yeah, but then
our president was murdered.
Yeah, the 2024 Sheen. It's like, oh, we all love each other. And Ghostbusters is the same. I think last time I was on the Weekly Planet, we talked about this because I did love Ghostbusters as a kid. Yeah. But even then, I was aware that it's a comedy. Like, that's what it is. Like, the cast are there. I mean, you've got Dan Aykroyd been incredibly earnest, and you kind of need that. Yep. But everyone else in that film is having a lot of fun. Bill Murray does not give a fuck. Like, he doesn't give a shit.
Does not give a fuck. Exactly. Well, because I don't like Ghostbusters. I like the first Ghostbusters. But yeah, I'm the same with you. Like, I hate the reference for this throwaway thing they made in the 80s. Like,
a Saturday Night Live sketch, essentially.
Yeah, it's like, come on. And it's just, they're basically like rat catchers. Like, that's what they are. But they're doing
that's the joke.
They're grubby and they're just like punching darts and they're con men. Like, that, it's fun because of that reason. And the new one, there's like long and loving shots of all their equipment and a guy comes back from the dead and it's his ghost and it's a guy who died in real life. There's even a moment where like they go into the the pocket of one of the Ghostbusters suits, and they pull out a Crunch wrapper from a Crunch bar, because in the first movie, one of them hands another one a Crunch bar, and it's like, what are you doing? And also, if you look at that scene, they're not even wearing the suits. So I don't know why, like, it's just like, what's the reference? It was just a thing that happened probably on the day, or, you know, that now everything is like, oh, this is really important. And then you end up recreating things lovingly, and it costs tens of millions of dollars to make some, to throw back to something that didn't mean anything at the time.
That idea that every line or every moment is like important and worthwhile and needs to be celebrated in the reboot is fucking, it's infuriating. Like Solo, what's your name? Solo, because you're a Malone, or what are those fucking dice on your dashboard or whatever? It's like not everything is important. And even like, and the Flash, the worst one was, okay, we're going to take on Zod. All right, you want to get nuts?
Yeah.
Let's get nuts. It's like, that is a line we've all been making fun of for fucking 40 years. It is not pointless.
Yeah.
There's no depth to it. It's a weird scene that happens in the original movie, which seems like it's been taken from a completely different film. It's like from Taxi Driver or something, and you put it in this 89 comic book movie. Don't put it in the film. It's, you don't get it.
Stop doing exactly. That. Why would he even say that? Like, unless it's a thing that he says. Like, it doesn't. It's just because, it's just such a strange scene, which is why it's so great in the first place. But just to kind of do it again. And it's not for anybody in the movie. It's for us looking at it going,
yes,
I recognize that.
I hate that.
I'm with you. I hate that shit. But there was like stuff that I didn't like that movie at all. I thought it was dreadful.
I know.
But
there's a moment in it. Your review was scathing.
Yeah, it really was. There was a moment where that I really did like, when Michael Keaton, I can't remember, but he pulls out like a tape measure to measure like the weight distribution of like a platform. That's right. Because he's like, he's from the 80s. Like, he's got a little Batman tape measure on it. And that's not something that he'd done prior. But it's just like, he's an old man who carries a tape measure. And he's a strange guy. Like, that to me was like, that's fun and interesting. And not even interesting. I love that my bar's that low, where I'm like, he had a tape measure. I liked it.
Well, the only like franchise I think that has done it successfully is one that copped shit anyway, which was Fury Road.
Recast
Max.
Yep.
And for better or worse, I don't love the portrayal, but at least it's different. Tom Hardy portrays Max rather than this kind of stoic, you know, man with no name that Mel Gibson did for three films. He played him as a fucking dude with PTSD, a kind of twitchy, muttering, jumpy kind of guy who just wants to fucking, like, Wile E. Coyote is just trying to fucking get from, you know, one spot to the next and doesn't want to die and all this kind of shit. And then I thought that was a really, like, if you're going to sort of gender switch or like bring more diversity into a franchise, I thought they earned it. You know, like we got to meet Furiosa and, you know.
She's getting her own prequel this year.
So. She's getting her own prequel.
Great.
But, it wasn't just a case of, Indiana Jones has a niece and now she's Indiana Jones. It's like, this is a person, this is a character with her own backstory, her own reason for being, her own motivation. She's neck and neck with Max the entire film. And it felt earned. And I also feel like the film, for three movies, the Mad Max films, they were desaturated, post-apocalyptic. Mm. Everyone knew what, the Book of Eli, every fucking imitator film. If you're going to do post-apocalyptic, it's going to look like that. And then George is like, I'm going to make it Technicolor and I'm going to make it like an acid nightmare. It's just going to be freaky and bold and everything's going to be in your face. And it's fucking great. And it worked so well. Mm. But I can't really think of another, a reboot or nostalgia franchise that's done something as different as that.
I wouldn't even say this is different, but I think one movie that does build on the first and is probably better is the Blade Runner 2049. They should never have made that, because Blade Runner has never been like a successful franchise. Like,
it's not
people
even
like
a good
us,
movie.
I appreciate it. You appreciate it.
But it's not.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not like people are like, oh God, I would love to see Blade Runner come back. I mean, I'm glad they did it because it's an incredible movie. the second one. But that does feel like it's not just about how many years in it, but it's not just about Harrison Ford. The world moves forward. It's not just the same thing again, slightly reskinned.
Yeah, it's exactly like that's the opposite of Top Gun Maverick. Like Deckard has moved on. Like he's changed. Yeah. The character is different. It's not like he stayed in stasis. Like if he's still wearing the same fucking overcoat that he was wearing 40 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah.
It would absolutely make no sense. I mean, put on Denis Villeneuve. Like,
oh, he's killing
constantly.
It.
Yeah. But like for so long, just making excellent films that would not do
that nobody
any good
saw,
at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now finally he's hit upon a formula. But you're right. Yeah, no, that is another example of a reboot that was actually, I mean, stylistically, it was very similar. I think the only difference is Mad Max. The Fury Road felt very different. Like, I know a lot of friends of mine who are Mad Max fans, but huge Mad Max fans, and they hate Fury Road because it's nothing like, they wanted stoic Max. They want desaturated. They didn't want all the kind of craziness. Whereas I loved that George did something different with it, you know, that in the 50 years or how long, I lose track of time.
It was, was 85 or 86 was the last one, maybe. Yeah. Thunderdome, which I don't think is great.
So 40 years.
It's a great movie, yeah.
40 years ago.
And that movie, it's like, there's not much to it. It's literally they drive in one direction and then they go, oh, hang on. And then they turn around and they drive back. Like, that's the whole movie.
I think that's the bit. What I love about it is that, plot-wise, in terms of mechanics, that's all there is to it. But everything of the story is in the production design, it's in the costume design, it's in the characterization. Like, there is such depth to that universe. I got into such a big argument when I was doing Home and Away when it came out, and I took on like 30 people in the crew who are all saying how much it sucked, and I was like standing going, you got it wrong. You're idiots.
That is
you don't
wild
understand.
To me.
One guy's like, why? You know, would one like why wouldn't place have water and one place have bullets? Like, how were they training? I'm like, it's not the real fucking world.
No, exactly.
Idiot.
Yeah.
Like,
none of this makes any sense.
None of it makes any sense. But it's the backstories of, you know, who the wives are, you know, where they've come from, what's going on with human trafficking. Like, it's metaphorical, but it's also in the design of a civilization. Like, they have their own language. They still worship gods. You know, you have dictators in this world. You have disease. You've got famine. You've got all this kind of stuff that you just need to absorb. And if you had a plot that was more complex than a truck drives this direction, then turns around and drives back, it's probably going to get harder. Then you got a Christopher Nolan film where every half an hour, two characters have to stop and explain what's going on because I've got no idea. Things are moving backwards, but they're moving forwards. And who's that guy? And
I could have with that. I know technically Tenet is like, it all makes sense and all of that. I understand that. But I'm during that movie, I'm like, I can't with this. Like, I don't care enough to follow this closely, you know?
Yeah. All right. Look, we're almost out of time. I don't know if we even.
But the point is they're getting worse, maybe.
They're getting worse. All right.
I don't even know if that's true. I think there's too many, and there's too many just average ones. I think that is the problem.
Okay. So I think, all right, so this is a solution, right? They just prune. They prune the comic book tree.
Absolutely, yeah.
I joked a couple of weeks ago on Tofop that there needs to be a comic book movie amnesty where any studio that is working on projects, just hand in your scripts, we'll destroy them, no questions asked. And we just prune it right back. Like, let's stop. I have no problem with, like, even the D-grade characters getting their own TV shows, but just let's look at what's been done.
Yeah.
And are we going to do it differently? I don't want to see another adults-only, like, version of The Boys on TV. Like, we've got that. Like, well, let's try something different. We've got to vet. We've got to be very stringent. Maybe the UN needs to come in on this. It's like, there's only going to be certain films approved. We're only going to allow 4 a year for the first 5 years.
Yeah.
And then after that,
and if you can get that
we'll review.
Right, then we'll, yeah. Then we'll
then move we'll release a bit more funds. That's right. The studios, we'll take the money from the studios. We'll become like a communist country. We'll take and we will disperse when we believe that they have earned the right to spend money on bigger films. And no more $300 million Black Adams or whatever. No. Like, let's
lunacy. So if you're going to make a $300 million movie, it can't just be designed by committee, whatever. You know, because they never make their money back. I never understand the thought process behind something like that. It doesn't.
I watched a bunch of like videos of The Rock in prep for Black Adam coming out, where he's taking you inside like the marketing meetings. And it's like him sitting at a boardroom table where they're surrounded by like Black Adam dolls and Black Adam sneakers and Black Adam jackets. And this is part of his selling of the movie. And I'm like, who does he think this is appealing to? Like,
yeah, exactly.
If you want to get lost in the magic of Hollywood, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you've been to a toy store lately. You probably have with your daughter, but you still see the old Black Adam the figurines, you know, sale there. People trying to get rid of them. Yeah, and it's nobody wants. But they made a big push. Yeah, exactly. They made a big push in the comics as well. Like they often do this, where I know we're gonna wrap it up, but like where Black Adam suddenly is a hero and he looks exactly like The Rock and all of these things. Like they really went hard on this thing that was nothing. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so has he got hair in the comic books?
Because he normally has hair. He's got like a widow's peak. It like slicked back. Yeah. 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 I think that was initially the way he was going to do it, because he came on in like 2008. But over those years, he went bald. So they changed the character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and then his other thing too is like, I know we've got to go, but we're going to keep saying that for another 10 minutes. But The Rock, in another video I watched in his prep for Black Adam, was talking about how like he got in the best shape of his life. Like he's never worked as hard.
And it's like, and they took all the padding out of the suit, right? Is that the one?
Yeah. Why? Fucking like enjoy your life, eat a steak.
Yeah.
You know, nobody have some cares. Chocolate cake.
Yeah. Nobody cares. Nobody's like, well, this is gonna get me in. Like to me, you look the same mostly. Like in everything.
I wouldn't be able to tell you in a padded suit or you in real life. It makes no difference to me, but I guess it was important to you. all right, James, we're going to have to wrap it up there. Thank you so much for coming to the show. You've got to check out The Weekly Planet. There'll be a link in the episode description. You can also find James on YouTube as Mr. Sunday Movies. We'll put another link in the episode description. Is there anything else you want to say?
That's everything that's happened in my life. So that's it. You've covered it.
All right. I don't know how to end the show. Excelsior.
Perfect. And let's get surgery.
Yeah, and lots of surgery.
Yeah. Listener.